Ecclesiastes chapter 5, continuing at verse 10. Ecclesiastes 5:10. And it starts out, "He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity." And of course, we've seen the doctrine of money, which is in your handout, or in your book, rather. Money is a slave. And if you're a slave to money, then you've got problems. If money is your slave, then you can enjoy it. And money is a necessity for life. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil. Many people say the money is the root of all evil. No, it doesn't say the money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. Because money, of course, equates with capitalism, and that's part of the laws of divine institutions. Capitalism is the way that you can satisfy the highest standard of living for a group of people that try to live in existence together in what we call a nation or a national entity. But it's the love of money. Because if you love money and that's your number one priority, then you'll never be satisfied because it's never enough. I got my first 100,000, and I want the first 200,000. And what will you do to get the money is the question. And therefore, they have the word loves twice. You love money, and you love abundance, and you're not going to be satisfied with it. And you can look at illustrations everywhere. Rich people are very miserable people. Many of them in the past have committed suicide, and many of them will commit suicide in the future. And they say that the money doesn't make them happy. Solomon was living this. He was extremely wealthy, and yet the money did not bring him happiness. But on the other hand, he didn't want to give up the money. So usually if something doesn't make you happy, you get rid of it. But here, he didn't want to give up the money, but the money doesn't make him happy. And therefore, he says, this too is vanity. But we need money to live, obviously. And but when you die, there's no U-Haul following your hearse. You cannot take it with him. We've already seen that he's bemoaned that. All the work, all the money I've accumulated goes to someone else, and I don't even get to have it. Verse 11, when good things increase, those who consume them increase. So he says, so what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. So this is true. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. The good things, of course, are related to the use of money, the proper use of money, and good things can come from that. You can get a better car, you can get a better this, a better that. You can enjoy these things. So what's the advantage to their owners except to look on? Yes, if you don't have Bible doctrine, you can just look at it and say, oh, okay, it's getting bigger and bigger, and bank account's getting bigger and bigger, but you can't enjoy it. That's why you have to have a cup. In Psalm chapter 23, where it talks about the cup, David says, I have a cup. And then God pours the blessings into the cup. You can have blessings poured all day long, but if you don't have a cup, you can't hold it in your hands. It's like sand going right through your hands. So if you have Bible doctrine, you can enjoy these things. You don't just look on, you enjoy them. So I have a nice truck, I have this, I have that. You actually enjoy the things that you have. But you got to have capacity to enjoy things. We'll see this later on with Solomon. He had a lot of girlfriends and wives, but he didn't enjoy any of them because he had no capacity. He had minus H. In other words, he was stimulated by them, but he couldn't enjoy them in the way that God established these things to be enjoyed. But then he has another bit of truth here. The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. Because why? Why is a rich man not allowed to have a good night's sleep? He doesn't have the good night's sleep because he is worried about his money. He's worried about someone's going to take the money, and how do I get more money? So in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 12, we see that the working man, it says, it doesn't say he's poor, it just says he's a working man. We're all working men. Even if you're a woman, you're a working man. Their sleep is pleasant because their main concern is not with accumulating or the love for money. And if you have a good job under capitalism, you can have an enjoyable life. And you'll see unbelievers that live an enjoyable life. By outward appearances, they don't have any problems going to sleep. Their conscience doesn't bother them. They're doing their job. and they're having a nice time of it. And of course, when they die, they'll go to hell. But if you're an unbeliever or a believer and you follow these laws of the divine institutions, you can have a healthy, happy life. The believer, of course, will not be able to enjoy these things because you're doing it without Bible doctrine. So the unbeliever can be much happier than a believer in reversionism or a believer that rejects the divine institutions. Many believers reject the divine institutions. They embrace socialism, for example, and they're born-again believers way out in the tulies, and they're miserable people, very miserable people. Oh, they might put up an outward appearance of how happy they are, but they're not happy at all. Whereas the unbeliever that follows these laws of capitalism, they're very happy. And we'll see this truism again as Solomon observes it. And so the rich person, absent Bible doctrine, what do they substitute for Bible doctrine? The love for money. They're miserable. Verse 13, there is a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. It harms you, actually. You hoard. Now, the hoarding here, again, is your love for money. There's nothing wrong with accumulating capital and money. Some of the greatest believers in the Old Testament were also extremely wealthy. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were multi-millionaires of their day. And, of course, King Solomon was extremely wealthy. But when he was in reversionism, he couldn't enjoy his wealth at all. It made him miserable. When he was properly attuned to Bible doctrine, he enjoyed his money. He enjoyed his building projects. But without Bible doctrine, he had no capacity to enjoy these things at all. King David was extremely wealthy. He enjoyed his money. And Jesus, of course, as we've seen, didn't come from a small carpentry family that was barely getting along. His father had a carpentry business because he got dropped on the family, got a big load of gold dropped on them by the wise men, the Magi. And with that gold, they were able to go into Egypt and sustain themselves for quite some time. When they came back into Nazareth, he started a carpentry business. And they had a lot of activity, a lot of wealth. Jesus had a very expensive robe on when he was crucified. That's why they didn't tear it up, because it was a Brooks Brothers. It wasn't a J.C. Penney job. So money is not evil. It's the love of money that's evil. God is a capitalist. He endorses private property. Thou shalt not steal. But the problem is, of course, is that people envy. They have a love for property. And that's the other, the big ten. Do not lust after what your neighbor has. So they've got money and you don't. So you want that. And that is evil, which means socialism is evil because it's all built on envy. You can't have that. We have to spread it around to somebody else. But of course, capitalism works when there's virtue in the capitalist. An unbeliever can have virtue. Romans that were unbelievers, a lot of the ancient Roman writers talked about virtue and how virtue was a great quality to have. It's true. What's virtue? Oh, they keep their word. They give their word, they keep their word. Unbelievers can do that. Virtue is you deal fairly with people. You have law and order. You recognize that. You have a strong military establishment. You endorse the family. You endorse marriage. You endorse privacy. These are virtuous things that are designed for the unbeliever and the unbeliever, unbeliever and believer, to maintain order in society. And yet, if you hoard money just to hoard money, it's not going to do you any good. It just makes you... You ever see that show, Hoarders, on TV? Do you think those people are really happy with all their stuff? They're not, because they cry, oh, I hate all this stuff. But when they start to haul it out of the house, they go nuts. So what do you want? Do you want your stuff or you don't want your stuff? Both. They're schizophrenic in their thinking. Same with the person that loves money. They hate the money, they love the money. They can't let it go, they want to let it go. 14, when those riches were lost through a bad investment and he had fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. So again, this person is risking everything to get more money. They're not being logical in their thinking, and therefore they didn't set aside. And if you make investments, obviously you have some investments you make that are risky, and you realize that I could lose it all. But you don't put it all on the table at Vegas. All those places at Vegas, they're not built on people winning. They're built on the illusion that you can be that one person that's going to be like those little machines at Denny's where they put the quarter in and it goes and picks it out, or like whatever that show was, Toy Story. And they reach in and pick me, pick me. Somebody's going to get picked, that's right. Somebody's going to get struck by lightning today. But that's not a good thing. get struck by lightning. I saw one guy that got struck by lightning, what, 5 times? It was on some show. It's like, you're either very lucky or very unlucky, whatever you want to look at it. Verse 15. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. It's true for everybody. As I said before in the last hour, there's no U-Haul following the Hertz. That's it. And when you go, you go. You can't take anything with you. I know the Egyptians used to like to bury all the stuff with this person. But where'd all that stuff go? Grave robbers got it all. Except for very limited tombs, like King Tut, where the grave robbers didn't get that tomb. But the rest of it, you made some poor people very happy. Because they went in and dug out all those tombs and took out all the gold. And they even opened up the sarcophagus and took out the gold earrings and the headdresses and everything else. So no, you can't take it with you. You can put it in a hole, but you can't take it with you. Verse 16. This also is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus will he die. So what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind? Throughout his life, he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. Yes, a person without Bible doctrine. Remember, this is Solomon is writing about the time that he's in reversionism. And he's totally, absolutely miserable, and yet he has everything. He has everything, and yet he has nothing. Because without Bible doctrine, you might have everything, but you have nothing. And all the things that you have make you horribly miserable. And he's describing to us his own misery, his own despondency, and he's sick, and he has vexation, and he's angry. He's angry. Because he wants it to be this way. He wants to have that fulfillment in his soul, but he can't have it. Because there's only one way a believer can have a soul that's at rest and at peace and has a grace orientation in life, and that is through the metabolization and intake of Bible doctrine. Now, it's true that Solomon got to, let's say he got to level C before he turned against it. And so he still has the memory of some of these doctrines in him, as we've seen before. And from time to time, they pop up in his writing as he's doing a retrospective examination of his life, and the Holy Spirit caused him to write it in this way for our purposes. Verse 18, here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself and all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Now he's speaking about the divine institutions, and he's speaking about the unbeliever and the believer. These are the things you should do. Now, Solomon recognized these divine institutions. We saw in the last Bible class, he said, it's good to have a king that plows the field properly. And that was him. I mean, he endorsed privacy, marriage, family, nationalism, capitalism, law and order, and a strong military. Now, in his personal life, he didn't live up to it, obviously. He didn't live up to this one, that's for sure. But he has an old sin nature. But he realizes that people that follow these things can have a rather satisfactory life. And that includes the unbeliever. So if you see unbelievers that appear to be more happy than you, that's because these people are following these things right here and you're not. And you should be in a position that's far different from that person. I run across a lot of believers that are miserable people. They're miserable in their soul. For a variety of reasons, but it all boils down to the same thing. They don't want Bible doctrine. They're daydreaming. They're daydreaming their way through life. And they think God is this and God is that. And they don't realize it, but they're reflecting the God of this world, Satan. They're not reflecting the God of reality. God in the heavens is perfection. Satan is imperfection. He's the ruler of this world right now, which is an imperfect world. But Solomon does recognize this, and this is a point of truth that the Holy Spirit caused him to write. You eat, drink, and enjoy yourself. And as an unbeliever, if you're going to reject the gospel, that's my advice to you. Well, dude, you reject the gospel, I got it. But I highly advise you to enjoy a good spouse, enjoy a good job, enjoy the benefits of living in a nation that endorses these things. And, you've seen unbelievers, and Christ recognized this. They're altruistic. They treat their kids good. They save money. They are nice to the dog. They're all these things. They're dog lovers, horse lovers, whatever. They enjoy the things of life because they follow these things. To that extent, they can have what we call neutral happiness. They can never have plus happiness, which is the happiness of God, one of his attributes, because they're not born again and they don't know Bible doctrine. But they can share this because the three categories of divine truth, they're in the top category. 19. Now, Solomon is a believer, but see, he can't enjoy these things. He cannot enjoy these things, but he's seen people that do. He's seen people that do. And so he's observing that. 19. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. Every man, not just believers, but every man. God causes the rain to fall on the good and the evil. And God allows these laws of divine institutions to be available to all people if they want to take advantage of them. And so it's a gift of God. Yes, it's a gift. You don't earn it or deserve it. God set up these parameters. And as humans, this is how we can operate at our highest level, whether we're believers or unbelievers. 20. For he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. You ever seen people that always worry about death? Where am I going to die, 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 die? Everything's death around the corner, death, 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 death. Well, the unbeliever that's satisfied with these things, he don't think about death. I'm having too good of a time with life. And yet, if they're exposed to the gospel, they don't want it. They don't want it. Now, they're negative volition in their souls. But they have positive volition in their souls towards the laws of divine institutions. And we call them conservatives in this country. And a lot of conservatives are unbelievers. Unbelievers. A lot of them are believers, but a lot of them are unbelievers. And there are believers that are conservatives that recognize all these things, but they don't want to go to category three, truth. They'll accept the category of truth here, but that's as far as they go. And so to some degree, they have stability in their lives, but that's about it. They will never advance beyond being a private if they're in the Old Testament or a second lieutenant if they're in the New Testament. Because remember, all believers in the church age are royal family. You have a higher rank in heaven than a loser believer in the Old Testament. You're a loser believer in the New Testament. But you're both losers. What's a loser? They refuse to accept the third category of divine truth. So they've obviously, if you're a believer, you've accepted category two, and you might have, as an unbeliever, accepted category one. So you just stay with category one, and you have a certain degree of happiness, and that's about it. And so you don't worry about death. You're having too much fun. If you ever go to a nice party, halfway through the party, people don't say, well, you know, when's this party going to end? No, they're just enjoying the party as the party goes on. They're not saying, well, you know, I wish this moment could go on forever. They're just doing what they're doing. And when death comes, death comes. Chapter 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is prevalent among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor so that his soul lacks nothing of all that he desires, yet God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys them. This is vanity and a severe affliction. So this is Solomon. He's writing retrospectively about himself. God gave him riches, wealth, and honor, and he lacked nothing. He had everything. From every desire, he had it. Yet God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys them. This is vanity and severe affliction. He couldn't enjoy it. He couldn't enjoy it. Now, who did this to Solomon? Solomon did it to Solomon. Remember, his soul lacked nothing, but he couldn't regulate his soul. You have to regulate your soul. You make decisions about what you're going to do with your life. And, of course, you might be tempted, I want to have a second wife. Just don't do it. Or you might be tempted to this or that and the other thing. Just don't do it. Well, Solomon gave in to his temptations, and he did it. And yet, he couldn't have the power to enjoy these things. And therefore, a foreigner enjoys them. Now, we're going to see who this foreigner is, because remember, Solomon's big thing that he wanted was a right wife. And a foreigner got his woman, Song of Solomon. We'll see that. He didn't get it. Somebody else got it. And it was a severe affliction to him. Ooh, he didn't like that at all. Verse 3, but he did it to himself. Verse 3, if a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, however many they may be, but his soul is not satisfied with good things and he does not even have a proper burial, then I say, better the miscarriage than he. This recalls back to the verse where he said, it's better that I was never born at all, which shows he's schizophrenic. And people, you've heard this before. I wish I'd never been born. I think they had a movie like that, didn't they? It's a Wonderful Life. I wish I'd never been born. Well, what would happen if you'd never been born? Well, I guess God could show you when you get to heaven if you'd never been born what would happen. But you are born. You've got to deal with reality as reality exists, not as what you wish would be the reality. That's the daydreaming. You don't daydream. You are here. Therefore, start with that point right now. You are here. Better the miscarriage than he. The miscarriage, of course, we know that biological life is not a human life. But you've got to have biological life for God to breathe the nepshama and you become a living being. Verse 4, for it comes in futility and goes into obscurity, and its name is covered in obscurity. It never sees the sun, and it never knows anything. It is better off than he. This is the miscarriage. This is the fetus. It comes in futility, never goes into, and goes into obscurity. The futility is, it was never alive. It was biological life, but it was never a living being. Therefore, it's futility. A miscarriage is futility because the nepshama was not imputed to the biological life. And therefore, its name is covered in obscurity. It never sees the sun, and it never knows anything. It is better off than he. Even if the other man lives 1,000 years twice and does not enjoy good things, do not all go to one place. Everything dies. Again, Solomon's in reversionism. You cannot interpret the book of Ecclesiastes unless you understand that concept. He's a born-again believer that's schizo. Because a believer in reversionism cracks up. And we saw this in the book of Psalms with David, how he said, I can't sleep, and I have extreme insomnia, and I'm nervous, and I'm fearful, and even a little cat's meow, and I think a lion's chasing me. They're schizophrenic. They have no mental stability at all, no stability in their life at all. And if you don't have stability in your life, do you want to be around a person that has no stability? No. They're a walking basket case. They need to be committed somewhere, obviously. And so he's saying, it's all futility, they're all going to die. Yes, it's they're all going to die, but after the death, there's two different compartments. There's two different judgment seats, one for the believer and one for the unbeliever. Verse 7, all a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not satisfied. Same concept. You do labor to fill yourself up, whether it's food or whatever it is, and yet you're never satisfied. A person that doesn't have Bible doctrine is never satisfied with the accoutrements of life, if you're a believer. You're not satisfied with it. Why? Why are you hungry and that you eat all the time? Because you're designed to run on Bible doctrine. You're not designed to run on the details of life, and all these things are the details of life. You're not designed as a believer to run on these things. If you're an unbeliever, yeah, you can operate on these things. You can operate on them and have a happy life, neutral happiness to a degree, and then you die and go to hell. But if you're a believer, you're a whole new creature now. You're designed to run on Bible doctrine. So even the things that you found satisfying as an unbeliever, these things will start to crumble also for you as a believer. As a believer. And then we have... where was I? I think we're going to start at, verse 7. All a man's labor is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not satisfied, even if you lived 2,000 years, as he said before. I lived twice 1,000 years. For what advantage does a wise man have over the fool? What advantage does a poor man have knowing how to walk before the living? Quite a bit. You have a huge advantage. Oh, the wise man has a huge advantage over the fool. But see, if you're in despondency, you can't distinguish the wise man from the fool because your equation is they both die. Therefore, it's all vanity. But it's not all vanity. Verse 9, what the eyes see is better than what the soul desires. This too is futility and striving after wind. So, you see something, you've heard this, your eyes are bigger than your stomach, or how's that go? You see something you want. You never get over a case of the wants. The eye see is better than what the soul desires. So your soul always, your soul is your thinking. You want more and more and more. And arrogant people never get over the wants. They always want the BBD, the bigger and better deal. Spouse, job, whatever. They're never happy. With whatever they got, they're not happy. They want more, 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 more. They see somebody else, I want that, I want that, I want that. They're never happy with what they have because they don't have Bible doctrine. If you have Bible doctrine, you're happy with nothing. Without Bible doctrine, you never get over a case of the wants. Job, he had nothing. Lord gave it to me. Lord took it away. He has a plan for all this stuff. I came into this world naked. I'm leaving naked. Remember Solomon saying, hey, you come in naked, you die naked, it's all vanity. Well, not from Job's perspective. This is great. I came in naked, I'm going to die naked. Because these are the details of life. These things aren't important. The grace of God gave me these things to enjoy. If he took them all away, well, he's got a plan for it. And therefore, I'm good to go. I know who holds the future. I don't know what the future holds, but I know who holds the future. And that is a phenomenal faith rest technique. When you have problems, that's all you got to say to yourself. I don't know what the future holds. None of us do. But I know who holds the future. So why am I worried? Well, because I'm a human. Okay, I'm a human. I'm worried a little bit. But it doesn't tangle me up. I don't have, you know, these knots in my stomach and woe is me and dial, get on 911 and call everybody I can think of and tell them I'm dying or whatever it is. You know, you just saw the wood in front of you. And if you die, you die. But again, you could say, well, I have a ace in the hole. What's your ace in the hole? Well, you know, God wants you to be a mature believer. Your ace in the hole is, I want to be a mature believer. And I can't die until I get there, because when I'm dead, game over. And therefore, I want to stay alive a little longer. I'm kind of somewhere on this line, but I know I'm not at the top. So therefore, I'm going to stay alive. And God will honor that because he wants you to stay alive. And therefore, if you want it, then you're in. That's your ace in the hole. That's always been the ace in the hole. Lord, keep me alive so I can reach the highest level of maturity, period. God will honor that prayer because that's what he wants, the doctrine of prayer in your book. When your desire lines up with his desire, you can't lose. Impossible to lose. Impossible. So we read on. Where was I? I keep losing my spot here because I start preaching. Let's go back to number 10, verse 10. Oh, yes, verse 10. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to stop preaching. We're going to get through here to get chapter 7. Whatever exists has already been ordained, and it is known what man is, for he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. Again, he goes back to despondency. Whatever exists has already been named. Yes, it's already been done. It's already existed long before you came around. And it is known what man is. People don't change. You see this from time to time, particularly the socialists. They think man is getting better. And then you have some people think man is getting worse. What's the truth? He's the same. He's the same SOB from the very get-go. He's not getting better. He's not getting worse. The world's going to hell in a handbag. Well, it might be, but it's not because people are getting worse or people are getting better. People are people are people, the same, same, same. The world gets worse when you reject the laws of divine establishment. When those nations reject that, yeah, it gets pretty bad. When Satan, of course, stirs up anti-Semitism, it gets pretty bad. Yes, but people are the same. They've always been the same from the very get-go. And it is known what man is. Man has an old sin nature. These utopian socialists, they believe that man is actually getting better and we can make a better world. You hear that every single generation. We're going to make the world a better place. No, you're not. You can't. The only way you can really make the world for a time a better place is to advance the laws of the divine institutions. Other than that, you're not going to change the world, make it a better place, because people are people are people. They have an old sin nature. So if you really want to try to advance the world as an unbeliever to make it a better place, you endorse the divine institutions. But see, most socialists, they hate the divine institutions, so they cannot make the world a better place. Impossible. For he cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. This is just an idiom. what's stronger than you? Truth. And the truth is that man is the same, always has been the same. So if you're trying to dispute with someone that's stronger than you, you're not going to win. So what's stronger than you in this argument? Man's the same. You're saying man's changing, getting better? No, he's not. It's always the same. Verse 11, for there are many words which increase futility. What then is the advantage to a man? Many words increase futility. What's your advantage if you're an intelligent person? And Solomon was the wisest person that ever lived and ever will live in terms of academic wisdom and discernment, in terms of the laws of the divine institute. Remember, that's what he prayed for. Make me the wisest leader that ever was. That will make you the wisest leader that ever was. And I'm just pointing to the divine institutions. He had that. He didn't get an automatic, magical download of the third category of truth of Bible doctrine when he said that prayer. There's no magical, automatic download of Bible doctrine. That takes thousands of decisions. He did get a download of wisdom. Boom. His IQ, whatever it was increased from X to X plus 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 automatically. Boom, just like that. And he knew the divine institutions already, so he was a wonderful, wise leader. But he had an old sin nature, so he couldn't really apply these things to himself as much as he did to his society that he ruled over. So he's saying, look, I'm the smartest guy that ever lived, but I can tell you right now, it don't make me happy. Why aren't I happy? You might have run across these people, you know, I'm not happy, really. You've got a great job, you got a great spouse, you got this, you got that, I'm not happy. You go, why aren't you happy? I'm just not fulfilled. What does that mean? Well, we know what the translation is. If they're a believer, they're not positive to Bible doctrine. Because who's responsible for your happiness? My wife, my husband, my boss? No. They're not responsible for your happiness. You are responsible for your own happiness. And if you ain't happy, you are not taking in your daily dose of Bible doctrine in a positive way. Because you are guaranteed to be unhappy even if you have the best spouse in the world, Brad Pitt or whoever it is. I don't know if he's a good spouse or not. But whoever would be the best spouse in the world, I guess for looks. I think Brad Pitt looks better now that he's older. He looks more like a tough guy than he was kind of a sissy when he looked younger. But whatever the happy utopian person it is, you can have that person and be totally miserable. You can have all that money and be totally miserable. You can have a garage. You have to build on 5 extra garages for all the cars, the muscle cars you're collecting. They don't make me happy. And of course, you've seen these people and you go, man, I wish I had some of those cars. I wish I had that. I wish I had Jesse's girl. I think there's a song about that. I mean, it's just your capacity is kaput. You have no capacity. So you can't make somebody else happy. Impossible. You could give them a little stimulation here and there, but you also can't make somebody else unhappy. Impossible. If that person had Bible doctrine, you can't make them unhappy. Not at all. You can tempt them to be unhappy, but you can't make them unhappy. I always like the story of the wife that's a mature believer married to a loser. She wasn't unhappy. She did her jobs under the Lord because she knew there's a purpose behind it. And he wasn't abusing her, so she didn't, you know, he wasn't hit her in the head or anything. She didn't call the cops on him. He was just a rotten egg, a bad apple. So did she throw the bad apple out and look for another apple? No. She just stuck with the bad apple. Because she knew the importance of Bible doctrine. So, verse 12. For who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime, during the few years of his futile life? We do. We can raise our hand. We know the answer to that one. He will spend them like a shadow, for who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? We can. We have Bible doctrine, but without Bible doctrine, if you're in reversionism, this is your song. For who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime? Well, I know exactly what's good for you, dude. Bible doctrine. Your daily dose of taking in Bible doctrine. That will give you the capacity to enjoy things. So when the things come to you, you have a heck of a time enjoying them. But without Bible doctrine, when they come to you, it'll make you miserable. It's a great irony, and I think we had a lot of movies and plays written about this very thing. And your few years of a few, yes, your life is short. You're not going to live 1,000 times two, as Solomon said. You know, you might get to 90 or 100 even, but that's very short. But it's enough time to reach maturity. It's enough time. You can reach maturity in 3 years. Jesus expected the disciples to reach it within 3 years. They didn't. But it can be done. It can be done. And then the rest of your life is, you know, you're now a witness for the Lord as a mature believer, going from pillar to post, doing this, doing that, getting stabbed in the back, getting downtrodden, getting this test, that test. Or I know everybody likes the prosperity test. Instead of the stabbing in the back test, Lord, how about give me a couple $1 million test? I want that test, not the stab in the back test. Well, each of them can lead to misery, each of them. But the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. But then you've got to understand relativity. Relative to every human that's lived, and Solomon is talking about thousands of years ago, you're living in the top 1% of all humans that ever walked on this earth. You're living in the top half of a 1% just by being an American in the United States of America. Refrigeration, air conditioning, a car, a paved road, HEB? Are you kidding me? People would give their right arm for the stuff that doesn't make you happy. Oh, poor you. You're just not happy. With her head bowed and her eyes closed, Father, thank you for the privilege of studying your holy word. We know that happiness comes from Bible doctrine. And we thank you that you have graced us out by providing us with Bible doctrine. It is our food. As our Lord said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. We know that your food is our manna, and it comes straight from you. Challenge us to take in this food so that we too can find your happiness and advance to maturity and hold the high ground of maturity once we've reached that ground to glorify you in time and also to glorify you in the eternal state forever and ever. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.